Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen all the way to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA, please go to pnwa.org. First of all, thank you and welcome back. I had to cancel last week's show, unfortunately, because my internet was being uncooperative. Amazing how something that was... I now feel as though I cannot live without something that was only a curiosity to me 15 years ago, but that's how life is, I guess. But here we are, back again, and you know, I get to talk to in this show and in my job on Author Magazine, the interviews I conduct there, I get to talk to some fabulously experienced writers, writers who have published dozens of books, whose names have resided atop the New York Times bestseller list, who've won big awards, and that's always a lot of fun. And I love to hear their stories, their long journeys. But I'm always equally interested in talking to guests like today's guest, debut, middle reader, don't call them young adult, but middle reader, author Kristen Kitzger, whose first book, The Wig in the Window, just came out in June of this year from HarperCollins. I love talking to debut novelists because it reminds me that the experience of writing and the value of that experience is not limited to the point in your career where you are ensconced in the throne of success, that it is, all of it is valuable, the first book and the last book, the first word and the last word. It all means something. It's all interesting. It's all exciting. It's all growth. It's all learning. And it's all worth talking about, which is exactly what we're going to do right now with Kristen. Kristen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here, reporting here from the trenches, the debut trenches, apparently.
Oh, it's a good place to be. Now, you know, Kristen, did I mispronounce your last name? It's Kitzger.
You got it right. You just had a little hesitation there. Kitzger.
I did. Yeah. Kitzger. Yeah. All right, Kitzger. Well, so, yes. So, are a month and a half old as a published author. How's it going?
It's been great. It's been a really busy and exciting time. But friends and family, of course, are always particularly excited for a first book. I don't know if they'll show up come second and third books, but
they will.
I'm teasing. But it's just been a really, really fun, warm time of celebrations. I'd say it's like a wedding that just keeps going.
It's just lovely, isn't
so,
it?
Yeah, it's been a lovely time.
Wedding?
Nervous making, of course. But,
yes, but this wedding is the perfect analogy, I think, because you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to try to unplug my phone, but I can't because I'm plugged into you. I think it's the perfect analogy because a book is a thing of love, isn't it? You wrote it. It came. It's something you loved. It's a story you love to tell, and now you're sharing it with the world, just like a wedding where you share your love with your partner with the world. Isn't it the same thing in a way?
Yeah, you're making something public, literally. Publication,
yes, exactly.
Right? That's announcing
right.
It to the world. And there's such a long delay, of course, in that, taking that private story public. So it's especially rich when you finally get to share it with the world.
And, yes, there was a very long delay, usually. But have you had the experience yet, and a lot of first-time authors have this, of... How do you say this? It's the surprise of understanding that perfect strangers pick up your book and read it by their own free will, and then it means something to them, and they aren't your parents, and they aren't your best friends, and they aren't your editor. They're just readers, and it means something to them. Have you got to experience that yet?
Yeah, it's flabbergasting, really. And I think I'm not dealing with it well, actually, because I thank people profusely as if they're doing me a huge favor by
right.
by reading
That's
my
right.
book. still. But it's very, very exciting. And I've just gotten my first fan mail from kids, and have met kids at different events, good reviews are nice. Sharing with writer friends is nice, but there really is nothing like a letter from a kid. And I was just talking to a bookseller recently, and I said, gosh, I hope that never gets old for me. I hope I'll never be so jaded not to be excited about a kid's fan mail. And she assured me that all of the authors that she's talked to over the years, it never gets old. So,
I doubt it will. My wife published a book, actually the same, I think it was, yeah, I guess it was. It was a middle reader also. And I remember when she started getting the fan mail. It's so touching. I mean, fan things from adults can be very touching too, but it's a different quality to them.
Right.
There's such an openness from the kids.
Right, right. And the interesting thing that I'm discovering too already is how many times the kids read the book. So
yeah.
An adult, you know, reads the book once typically.
Right.
And doesn't
That's
literally
right.
flip back to the first page, and maybe it's because it's a mystery, but
yeah.
And you want to go back and sort of see the clues, the breadcrumbs along the way. But I've had several now, and it hasn't been out too long. Do that, and I remember that as well. Reading the wheels off of books as a kid, rereading, having no problem knowing the plot in advance,
yeah.
and just wanting to be in that world longer. And it's
That's
so
right.
flattering to me that they're sharing that. Yeah.
You know what's so interesting about that? When I teach people about writing, the thing I try to stress to them is when you're writing, what you're doing, if you can remember to do it, is to go to this place, just like those kids want to turn again and again to this lovely world that you've created and just be in that world, like you said. As a writer, hopefully that's what you're doing. You're saying, I'm going to try to create a world within me that I want to return to again and again so that I can share it into a story form. But that's the to you, you hopefully get to go to a place you want to be in order to write the story you want to write. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why it can get more and more difficult, or is difficult right now, with so much going on in the real world and not your fictional world. For
yeah.
me, you know, a book coming out, there's all kinds of communication from people, so much planning that goes into it. You have this sort of wider world that you're much more linked in with, and I'm sure other authors much more seasoned than I have talked about that difficulty of the balance between the business and the writing, especially when you're new
yeah.
to something. It's like a new job. You really don't know anything. So you're
yeah.
speeding along. You're sort of pulling onto the freeway at about 50 miles an hour, and everyone else is zipping past you at 70, and you're trying to figure out, you know, where the gear shift is and whatnot. So entering into the fictional world of my sequel book has been challenging. I'm constantly going in and back out of it again.
Do you? So it's challenging just because of the of your time constraints, or is there any kind of? And this certainly goes on, and I don't want to curse you, but it can happen where the writer starts becoming a little self-conscious, because before you were writing in the kind of blissful terrarium of unpublishedness, but now you're aware that people are actually going to read it, which can either work for you or maybe against you. Is it purely time, or is there a psychological element to it?
I don't think it's time. I don't think it's the other thing either. I'm delighted that
no.
something that I'll be writing will see the light of day, well, hopefully.
Good.
Go terribly wrong. Gosh, yeah, I hope you don't curse me here.
No.
But I think it's the energy. You know, you only have so much mental energy for different things. So I think it is hard to switch between the kind of extroversion that promoting a book involves
yes.
and the introversion of writing. So here I am chatting on the phone with you this morning. Fortunately, it's August and it's nice and quiet in my other work life, but so I could get some writing done. But I, you know, probably about 45 minutes beforehand, I stopped being very productive because I'm thinking, oh,
right.
I'm going to go on the phone with Bill.
Right. Well, I'm sorry to do that to you.
I know.
I sure it was going to be worth it. Yeah, you know,
oh,
it's true that when you write, you really have got to create this cocoon for yourself. And I was teaching a class to these people about writing, and they were all complaining about time. And I said, I think it's not time you need, but to learn how to shut your mental doors on all the rest of the world
right.
where there's all this happening. Because you really do want to go into a kind of a trance almost almost when you write creatively.
Right.
So now, you're talking about a book seeing the light of day. This book, in a way, you got your legs for this when you won first place at the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference. I guess it was the middle reader category of fiction. When was that?
That was in summer of 2009 at the July conference in 2009.
I was there.
And at that time, were you?
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah.
At that time, it was called Young and Yang Private Investigators. The main characters are called Young and Yang. And I don't know if they do now have a children's category or middle reader, but at the time it was, and I knew so little, I might have just entered it in the wrong category, but I won the YA category, even though it was a kid's book. So I don't know how that worked out. But
won that. Was that exciting? Did you care?
It was really unbelievable. Submitted it at the encouragement of a teacher in an online writing course that I was taking. He pointed out that a great way to build confidence and start to make connections and join with community was to enter writing contests. And when I got the call that it was a finalist, I was really surprised. It took a really long time for me to believe in myself, I was an English teacher, or I still teach, but really long time, and it seemed safer to involve yourself in story in that way, to be reading books with kids or talking about story. I'd worked in Hollywood and development, too, because it just seemed like a more practical profession. And
sure.
It was really much more talented people, rock stars, that would actually write books. And so I had started this sort of on a lark, and then when I won, it was the first moment I was like, hey, maybe I have this elusive thing they refer to as talent, I don't think I really believe in, but
neither
at the time
do I.
It felt that way. And just having people excited at that conference, and as part of winning, you read aloud, and people came up to me and were excited about it. I met agents who were excited about it. I mean, the manuscript was a total mess. But the first pages, I guess,
but it won.
Were great. But it won. I guess it probably won for the voice and the writing and the concept, maybe. I don't know. Maybe it was the only entrant.
I actually judged that category, believe it or not.
Oh, there you go.
I didn't read your piece, but I was the thing. I judged that guy. You were not the only one, I assure you.
Whatever it was. Well, there were some other pilots, so I know they were there. Whatever it turned out to be, I did need that sort of mythical stamp of approval at that time to keep me going. And I'm so grateful to PNWA for offering that contest, because it really, really was the critical thing that kept me pushing forward.
I'll tell you, that story, this is such a common story with so many writers, and it's one of the first steps they have to overcome. Now, sometimes you overcome it very young because for some reason that kind of validation, or you just don't need to worry about it. But the idea that your voice belongs out there with everybody else's, and that your book, should it be published, is going to be put on the shelf right next to all the other authors that you admire, whether it's Marjorie Langell or Judy Blume or Stephen King, or doesn't matter. Once it's on that shelf, it's a democracy of choice. Mm. And if you're on it, you belong on it. But it seems so strange because, just like you said, you've spent your life just as a fan, as a reader.
Right. I'm still in awe of my fellow writing friends that I keep company with such talented people now. But really, I did all the time. I just didn't notice.
Now, you said you weren't sure if you believed in talent. Do you mean that you don't believe that you have talent, or you don't believe in the concept of talent as it's bandied about in the creative world?
I mean the concept. I think it can be a really damaging concept.
Thank you.
And that's come up more in pop culture in the last few years. I think there was a book called Talent is Overrated. I can't remember the author. I think, there's another another book about, I think it's called, can't remember the title of it, but yeah, I think it's a damaging concept that I've seen that a lot in my students, where if they think they either have something or they don't, then what's the point in trying at all? And
yes,
certainly people have different skill levels, you know, or different strengths as writers. But I really think it a lot of stories aren't being told because people feel they don't have something magical, when really the real talent is knowing that it doesn't matter, and that if you want to tell a story, if you have that passion, you can learn how to.
Amen. You know, Mozart said, and Mozart was said to be a talented guy. He said, talent isn't luck, or I'm paraphrasing, but I got the end right. Talent isn't luck or craft or skill. It's love, 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 love. That's what old
right.
Mozart said. And think about it. It's your desire to tell the story which keeps you there, teaching you, tell it better and better and better. And then suddenly you tell it the way you finally want to tell it. And people say, my God, you're talented. Look at you.
Right, right.
And it was your love.
I could never do that, they say.
Yeah, right. It's not true. And it's absolutely debilitating, because the idea that you're either born with it or without it means that it's just this roulette wheel. Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. Somehow you might want to do it, but nope, the cards didn't come up right, so I guess you can't. I don't buy it. I do not buy
right.
it. Not at all. So now you're a teacher. So what age do you teach?
I taught right now. I actually run a tutoring business, so I teach all ages, sort of from fourth grade and up. But I taught seventh grade for many years, and that's really was my inspiration for this book. Was
grade.
I needed them as a muse.
That
in my own middle school memories. So seventh grade was my year. I taught high school as well, but I really my favorite was the sort of enthusiasm and silliness of seventh grade.
Boy, that's an interesting year. That's really the big cusp year where you're just turning towards your adult self. You're just starting to glimpse it a little bit. Just glimpse it.
Right.
Still
right. And actually the main character's name, Sophie Young, is kind of a nod to that, where she's wise and young at the same time. And, you know, it's that age where you have stuffed animals all over your room, but you're definitely aware of more adult issues and the world around you.
Well, no,
you.
It's starting to happen. You might date. You know, kids, when I was in seventh grade, we were starting to date. That was what was starting to
right.
happen. And so all that was getting introduced, and drugs were coming in and all that. Well, now in your childhood, if I read your bio correctly, you were sort of the Wig in the Window, by the way, I don't know if we've mentioned it just very briefly, is a mystery for readers ages 8 to 12. And you were interested in mysteries yourself as a youngin, weren't you?
I was, and I definitely drew upon my childhood spy past in order to write this this book. The Wig in the Window is about two best friends who get into a world of trouble when their innocent game of spying turns up a real-life mystery involving their school counselor. And it really puts a strain on their friendship as the stakes get higher and higher as they go, trying to get to the bottom of the truth about her. Now, I never had a mysterious, strange, scary school counselor. I never snuck out of my house at night. But I did have a spy club with my best friend, which I think
who
many of us might have
on?
Back in the day. You know, we didn't actually spy much. We maybe peered out some windows, but we basically were all about the accoutrement that went with spying, like spy badges, most wanted posters, and we would hang out in her garage she had this loft, and that was our spy headquarters, and we would have a lot of theories about our neighbors. And I remember all that jumping to conclusions, and we had a lot of fights, too, about who got to be which agent and who was going to do what. So I definitely was tapping into that when I was writing The Wig in the Window.
Now, do you write for your do you write for that girl who was 10, 11, and 12? Can you remember her well enough to know what she would like?
Yeah, I remember her from the inside pretty well.
Yeah, well, that's about
I think,
all you get.
Yeah. The thing about that time is I moved a lot as a kid, so I moved about every 2 years. And there's a real blessing that comes with that later in adulthood, because your whole life, it's very easy to know what age you were where, and your memories are very rich of that time, whereas I think if you grow up all in one place, I'm not sure, because I didn't do that, but they might run together a little bit more. Was that the summer I was 8, or was that when I was 12?
Right.
I know exactly where I was just about every year, because my parents moved. So I think having that geographic change helped me tap into the memories a little bit more of that time, and I had different friends because I was always having to make new friends. So I feel like I could go back to a number of different ages. I think the reason I gravitated to that age in particular was it precisely what you said before. It's like the cusp of adulthood, but also because I was teaching that age group for 7 years. So
We actually have a caller, and he's got himself a question, I think, to ask you. Is this Jeffrey?
It is, Bill. How are you, sir?
I'm fabulous. How are you doing?
Looks like we're both battling with the net gremlins.
We are, but I'm live now, baby.
Yeah, well, Miss Kristen, the dog ate my homework. I wanted to tell you that.
Oh, good. It's all right. I'm a very forgiving teacher, but probably far too forgiving.
Well, that's wonderful. Wonderful interview as always, Bill, and I wanted to just get a quick plug in for your book, if I may. Right Within Yourself, an Author's Companion, a compilation of essays wonderfully written by Mr. Bill Knauer. This is a general question I ask of most other writers. What is your process? Do you have a certain process when you write of outlining or making notes? What's a day in your writing life like, please?
All right, now before you answer, thank you, Jeffrey, by the way, but before you answer that, all right, I have a weird and strangely useless skill. I guess we'll call this a talent, but it's that I can usually guess whether or not writers outline by talking to them.
Oh, this is cool. All right, yeah.
Having said that, having prepped that, you know, there's all the way from like outline every square inch of it and then begin writing to dive in. You're not a dive inner, and you're not in every inch of it, but I would say between that, you like 20% outline. You have like a loose idea, and then the rest you just go. How close am I?
I'd say you're pretty darn close, but for a different reason than you think. I think that the 20% is accurate, but it's basically because this was the first thing I had ever written, the Wig in the Window. I just kept rewriting it. So I wrote a draft without any outline whatsoever. And then I had to toss it out and rewrite it, and then I outlined it as I was going, if that makes any sense, sort of in a reverse outline way. So there's kind of a 20%. And then, and now I am working on the second thing I've ever written, the sequel called The Tiara on the Terrace. And, of course, that needed to sell. I needed a more detailed outline for that, and that I've outlined within an inch of its life, and I think I might have run the life out of it. So I need to throw out portions of it, and it has not been as smooth of a process.
Here's my advice to you on this, and I have talked to so many writers about this outlining process, and I understand that the needs from the editors to give an outline, yada yada yada, but if you are an outliner, you need to outline. But at heart, which doesn't sound like you are, the outline will not serve you. It'll have the exact opposite effect. So give them whatever they need, but you got to work the way you work, and you've got to let your creative process work the way it works. So don't try to make yourself into an outliner. It will not work if you aren't meant to do it. If it's really not, it's true, and you don't have to do it. There's a lot of writers. Louis Sachar won't tell anything about what he does. He won't tell them anything, but he's got
the experience. It's in a bit of a different stratosphere, I think.
But, he is, but still, I'm just saying.
We all have. Yeah, but to answer your question, Jeffrey, just sort of on the nuts and bolts day-to-day thing, I think what I like to do is I sketch out scenes. So it's sort of like I'm outlining scenes, but I'm sort of getting the beats of dialogue down. I'm writing in gibberish and kind of getting the shape, almost like an artist would sketch the big picture of something. And then when I feel I have that shape and I know sort of the turning point of that chapter, then I go in, and then I really lose myself, and I tend to overwrite because it's more fun for me that way. And then eventually I come back to it and cut it down and tighten it up.
That is interesting. That's unusual. That's a somewhat unusual method. You see, you never know.
Is
so
it?
Many different ways.
Oh, it feels so normal to me.
Well, of course it does to you because it's what you do. You see, that's how it works. It's great
right.
You found your way to do it. You always say you're not trying to learn how to write a book. You're trying to learn how to write your book, right?
Right, right.
That's very cool. I knew
keep
a woman
a
once who
file
who wrote,
where I'm just constantly cutting things. Yeah.
And you
I
think
keep
you're going to use it again, right?
Oh, I've never used a single thing from that ever.
Of course not.
I've never gone back.
Right. Yeah, I wrote a book once where I kept a huge file of everything I cut, certain that I was going to go back and it was like three books of cut stuff out that I put in but never used. Well, that is very interesting. So, but that's a very intuitive way to work, I think. You're feeling it out sort of in your head, and then you actually write stuff down. You actually write little snippets down.
Oh yeah, yeah. Words actually don't come super easily to me in full sentences. So writing in that gibberish kind of way helps me figure it out. And then I'm not wasting time getting too caught up in the actual language.
What does that mean? Words don't come easily to you in full sentences. What does that mean? I mean, I kind of know what you mean, but it's interesting to me that you obviously like the use of language, but you need why you think they don't come easily in full sentences? Do you think?
I don't know. I mean, obviously we're sitting here chatting. I'm having no trouble.
You seem to be doing fine.
Putting together
yeah.
sentences, but I think in a book it's just a heightened realism and a different thing. I think it could be because I'm writing for kids. I'm not entirely sure. I haven't tried writing for adults, but trying to get the voice of that kid, it maybe is not my natural voice entirely, so I have to kind of adjust and recalibrate what I would normally say.
Do you like the voice that you use for the kids?
I do. It's probably not going to be everybody's cup of tea, as any first-person narrator is, but she's funny and clever, and I do get tired of it for extended periods of time, but you know, she's not distant from my 12-year-old self, so I can't dislike her.
Oh. Yeah, you know what the one nice thing about writing for kids is the gentleness required. Sometimes when we write for adults, we can be a little hard on ourselves about the harsh realities of the world, but we don't. And even though, obviously, when we write for children, we don't spare them suffering, we don't spare them the challenges, there is a gentleness that we lend to them, which I sometimes wish could be granted to adults.
Right. Lots of hope. I enjoy the wonder, the sense of wonder and curiosity.
Yeah.
And drama. I mean, my goodness, everything. I mean, that's what I get tired of, is the drama.
Yeah, well, what's 12,
everything
huh?
Is exciting.
Well, Kristen... What a dramatic note to end on. Thank you so much for stopping by, and good luck with the wig in the window.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure you'll be doing some school tours coming up in September, maybe?
I'm looking forward to that, yes. I had a very busy summer of events on the East Coast and in California, and I'm having a nice little pause here before the school year starts, but I do hope to get in the classroom. It's one of my very favorite things to do, and I'm excited excited to meet more kids and talk to them.
Well, I am sure they'll be excited to meet you. Thank you so much, Kristen. Good luck.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Hope and wonder, everybody. Can't beat that. Make sure to come back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, where I will be talking to the lovely novelist Holly Robinson. Until then, I want you to think only about those things that make you happy. What do you want to create? What do you want? Write what you love. Do what you love. Talk to who you love, and I don't think you can.